Pass in left corner to Aguila. Aguila the left circle. Pass into Yellow. Shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, let's get it going. Happy Tuesday. We've got an hour of Flames Talk ahead for you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you from our Groundworks downtown studio. Happy Tuesday. It's August 13th. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Save 40% on a Halo Smart Lock and start unlocking your house right from your phone. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Yeah, Steinberg, Vickers on this Tuesday. Hi, Vic.
Hello, Patty. How are we doing?
I'm doing well.
Good.
It's good to get back into a Flames Talk groove. It's nice to be back. Something caught my attention when we were talking on Monday's Welcome Back show, and we were talking about the two players the Flames signed to contracts. They signed Adam Klapka, who we'll hear from later on this hour, and Jan Kuznetsov to one-year deals as pending RFAs. They signed those guys on Monday, and we were in the back half of the program Monday, the last segment, you and I were talking about, hey, what are the chances of those guys getting NHL minutes? What are the chances of one of or both of Klapka, Kuznetsov playing NHL games this year or making the team out of training camp? And one name that came up that we didn't dive too much into was Jacob Pelche. And specifically talking about, would a guy like Klapka have an opportunity to play NHL games this year? And basically your point was, hey, he's one of a number of forwards that you're like, you don't really know exactly where they fit, whether it's Coronado or Dryden Hunt or Walker Dewar, Adam Klapka, who got six NHL games last year. And a name that you can absolutely throw into that same mix is Jacob Pelche, who is an unsigned RFA, one of the few RFAs they still got to take care of this offseason. I don't have any worry about him getting signed. I think that'll happen, but what does this season look like for Pelche? And I don't know the answer to these. These are almost rhetorical questions that I ask. Like, does he have a spot on this team? Is he a guy that is going to be on the NHL roster at a training camp? Is the NHL where he belongs? Like, I don't know the answers to those questions as we enter training camp next month.
It is one of the more interesting ones for me as it pertains to what the forward group's going to look like for the Calgary Flames, because I think you have probably 10 names that you're willing to put ink to paper on the fact that they're going to be on the opening night roster, ranging from Martin Pospisil all the way through to Blake Coleman and Michael Backlund to Connor Zary, Anthony Mantha, and even I'll throw Ryan Lomberg in there because you don't sign him to that deal without the intention.
Lomberg's an everyday guy.
Yes, exactly. About a month ago, 5 weeks ago, I did a roster reset for NHL.com, and part of the project is sort of projecting out what the lineup looks like. And I had a lot of difficulty doing so. And Jacob Pelche was kind of centered a little bit around that, because Jacob Pelche is one of the, he's not going to be the most prominent player amongst the forward group, but to me, he is the most interesting from the perspective of, okay, well, he got hurt twice last year and it really derailed him. What is he when he hits his peak? Where does he fit in the lineup as it stands now? Has he been passed by certain players like Matt Coronado and Adam Klapka? How does he compare to the likes of Dryden Hunt and Walker Dewar in terms of, does Jacob Pelche have a job with the Calgary Flames next year? And then you add in the wrinkle of, one, his contract status. As you mentioned, he's a restricted free agent. But two, this will be the first time that Jacob Pelche requires waivers to be assigned
that's
to the Calgary Rangers.
Wrinkle,
and
right?
That's the biggest, I don't want to say headache, but that's the biggest sort of sticking point in trying to project the roster. So when I built this out 5 weeks ago, I had Jacob Pelche in because of the fact that he is going to require waivers if he's not on Calgary's roster. But I had him ahead of Matt Coronado, which I didn't necessarily love, but still did so for the fact that Matt Coronado, to me, needs to play in a top nine role to crack the Calgary Flames roster, whereas you're probably okay with Jacob Pelche playing in that fourth line role. But to me, he's a really interesting case of, where does he fit or does he still fit,
yeah,
based on what we've seen over the course of the last season?
And I do think that there will be a forward spot or two that is up for grabs. and that we do see some competition for in training camp. I don't know what that fourth line looks like, but you know, if the Flames are looking, which I think they are and should be, if they're looking to boost Mantha's value and potentially flip him at the deadline, which is fully, I think,
absolutely
fully in the realm of possibility. Well, if they're trying to get Anthony Mantha to 15, 20 goals prior to the trade deadline, you're not playing him on the fourth line.
No, not at all.
So now all of a sudden, and Craig Conroy was very transparent in saying, yeah, we signed Mantha because we think there's a really good chemistry or potential chemistry with Jonathan Huberdeau. So now all of a sudden you're talking about Mantha and Huberdeau almost certainly going to get a ton of time together in training camp and probably a good bet to start the season together. I don't even know where a guy like Connor Zeri fits on this roster, and he is far ahead of a guy like Pelche on this depth chart. And that's not taking a shot at Jacob at all, because I'm a huge fan of the young man. I think that what we saw from him a couple of seasons ago, rightfully so, gave a lot of Flames fans some optimism about what he might be. But after this last season and the way things look right now, I don't know where he fits. And I don't know if he's a shoe-in to start the year as an everyday guy on this roster.
Well, when you rewind 365 days and in conversations with Craig Conroy, and yeah, okay, who's coming to camp on a free agent tryout? Who might you be looking at on a PTO? Craig Conroy is pretty adamant. We're not really going to go that route. We're going to see what the kids have. We're going to see if there's an opportunity for some of the younger players to seize that opportunity, and crack the roster. And for me, the two big names then was Jacob Pelche and Matt Coronato. Of course, Jacob Pelche gets injured in a preseason game. Was it 20 minutes into exhibition play? Was it in that first game?
It was against Seattle. I'm just trying to think. I thought he had played one game prior. But
either way, we're talking about
early in the preseason,
yeah. Derails him for half a season. So he never got the opportunity to sort
and
of hit the
backs,
ground running.
Five games back in, or three games back in, or whatever it was. It was on that Eastern Conference road trip. It happened again.
Long Island?
Happened against the Rangers.
Okay, on that trip.
It was on that trip, though, yeah.
So here's a situation where Jacob Pelche is probably a year behind where you'd want him to be if you're the Calgary Flames, just by way of these injuries and trying to evaluate how he fits in, where he fits in, if he fits in. And he basically had to play catch-up all season long, and now you're at a point where he was passed by Connor Zeri on the depth chart. He was passed by Martin Pospisil on the depth chart. You can look at Anthony Mantha, and I kind of look at him and Andrew Mangiapane as sort of just switching spots in the top nine, not literally on that line with Backlund and Coleman, but just
but
reserving a spot in that
player,
top nine. So suddenly, Jacob Pelche finds himself further down the depth chart than maybe he was a year ago, with Matt Coronato maybe pushing above, but Coronato, of course, still requires waivers. And again, for me, he needs to play in a top nine role in the NHL level or a top line role in the AHL, the fourth line. Granted, he played there admirably down the stretch last season, but that's not the best development path in my mind for Matt Coronato. Adam Klapka, is he past him? We saw Klapka get games, and then we're still in the conversation of, well, you still have to earn a spot, so can you jump Dryden Hunt? Can you jump Walker Duehr? This is a real interesting camp for Jacob Pelche, mm-hmm. because of all the names that maybe have passed him on the depth chart and the fact that you can't just send him to the AHL if and when you want to. He does require those waivers.
So as it stands right now with the roster as it's assembled, and again, Pelche doesn't have a contract, but I don't think we need to worry about that. But if you're looking at this top nine right now, Huberdeau, Kadri, Kuzmenko, Coleman, Backlund, Mantha, Sharon Govich, Pospisil, Coronato, that is nine already, and Zeri. So right now you've got 10
Did
names.
Did you have Backlund in there?
Yep.
You have 10 names now,
yeah,
including Coronato.
Exactly.
Yes, perfect.
So 10
perfect.
Names that would be top nine candidates, because I'm fully with you. I don't think there's no doubt that Coronato makes more sense in this team's top nine. Does not, unless you're going to go with like an all-skill fourth line, which I don't know if the personnel exists. Coronato might be better suited in the American League to start the year if there's not a spot for him on one of the top three lines on this team.
And that's not to say injury or trade happens. All of a sudden, Coronato gets elevated to that NHL status. It's not going to be a fourth liner bumped up to the third or second or first line. It's going to be Matt Coronato elevated from the Wranglers, at least as it stands now. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, that's how it would go. So, yeah, if you're Jacob Pelche, you are fighting with Dryden Hunt, Walker Duehr, Klapka. Less of a degree Kevin Rooney in my mind, because I don't think that that's the role that Jacob Pelletier is going to be fighting for. But you've got four players that can play on the wing, and you're a winger. And your situation is NHL or waivers. This is a challenge directly to Jacob Pelletier to show manner. And I get that he's a former first-round pick. He was a 26th overall pick in 2019. That's all sunk cost now. It doesn't matter if he was picked in the first round or the seventh round. What Jacob Pelletier needs to do is come into training camp and prove he belongs in the NHL, prove that he's still ahead of Hunt, Duehr, Klapka, and grab that fourth-line role. Now, in full disclosure, I do have him on that fourth-line left wing in my projected roster.
So who else did you have there?
Pelletier, Rooney, Lomberg is the fourth.
Okay.
Hunt and Walker Duehr would be your extras because they're on.
Which I'm fine with that. And
right.
And if that is where Pelletier starts, that's great. But then where is that? That has Coronado not on the roster.
That has
then?
Coronado in the AHL.
Okay.
Not. Yeah. Doesn't have Klapka in a top 12 role either.
It has Zeri down the middle.
I do have Zeri down the middle. Pospisil on left.
Who is the third center?
I don't. I went Kadri Backlund, Zeri.
That's who I would go with. I quite liked what I saw from Zeri in his very limited work down the middle, and I don't think there's anything wrong with letting it buck there for this season and really seeing what you've got with Zeri down the middle. Because if it goes the way you hope it goes, well, maybe you've got your number two center going forward, right?
Absolutely. I don't hate the idea of flirting with Martin Pospisil down the middle in training camp just to see.
They should. They absolutely should in training camp. I'm with you 100%. But it goes back to the fact that I don't know if there's a top nine spot for Pelletier for grabs. He
Not
might
at all.
Be fighting for a fourth line spot or nothing. And you know what? If you're the Flames, you probably look at a guy who's been in the organization for more than half a decade now and say, hey, that's where we're going to have you to start. And that's where Andrew Mangiapane started. Mangiapane, who I think there's some real similarities in terms of Pelche and Mangiapane as players. I do think Mange's offensive upside is going to remain higher than Pelche's. Like, I don't know if I see Pelche flirting regularly with 20 goals like what we've seen from Mangiapane, but I see a lot of similarities in the players and the way they play and how tenacious they are. They're both quote-unquote undersized. They both are really smart in their own zone. Well, Mangiapane played with Hathaway and Derek Ryan and got his feet wet in the NHL in a fourth-line role and moved his way up. So maybe that is where Jacob Pelletier needs to start this year. Where maybe that's where Pelletier really starts to cut his teeth. And we're talking about Kuzmenko and somebody else. So I like Kuzmenko a lot. I really do. But there's a chance he gets traded this year. So maybe it's Kuzmenko and somebody else get traded before the trade deadline. Well, now all of a sudden, Pelche's been in a fourth-line role all year. Now you can bump him into your top nine, and it makes a whole lot more sense.
Yeah, because as it stands right now, you've got 10 players vying for nine spots in the top nine, if you're including Matt Coronado. And no disrespect to Jacob Pelche, but in terms of a scoring role, Matt Coronado has jumped you. He has jumped the queue. And for me, there's not even a spot as it stands on August 13th for Matt Coronado to crack that top nine without significantly moving someone down. I don't like the thought of him taking Martin Pospisil's spot in the top nine and having Pospisil on the fourth line. I think Pospisil's has earned more than that.
Yeah.
So he's firmly in my top nine. And now this is a matter of, okay, Jacob Pelche, you're not trying to compete with Matt Coronado or Anthony Mantha for a top nine role. You are very firmly competing with the other forwards that can play left wing, that play that grinding two-way defensively skewed game that is like a Dryden Hunt or a Walker Duehr, because as it stands and how this roster is created or built right now, there's just not that top nine opportunity for you.
Yeah. Which I think now that we've talked it out and we've kind of really dove into it, I'm okay with him. If he wins,
I think
out
it's
of the
a
spot,
good spot.
Like if you go Rooney, Pelche, Lomberg is your number four line to start the season, I don't mind that at all.
Which I did. That is my exact fourth line. And I just think it makes a lot of sense. And from just a construction standpoint, there's a lot of tenacity on the wings between Jacob Pelche and Ryan Lomberg. And so I think that those two, if they found a little bit of chemistry just from a crash and bang, and again, they're not the biggest players. So we're not talking about 6'5" guys going in and running defenses through the end boards. But just with the speed and the tenacity and the little bit of the grit that those two have, yeah. I think that could be a fun four.
Do you have your, do you have, so what you did this a few weeks ago?
5 weeks.
Okay. So you have it up in front of you?
I actually do, yeah.
Okay. So let's see if I could, because I haven't seen it.
How dare you?
Well, I've been so off the grid. I've tried to stay away from all of these things.
Okay. Fair enough.
So do you have Kadri, Pospisil, Kuzmenko together?
I do.
Okay. Do you have Zeri with Huberdeau and Mantha?
I do.
And then you have Sharon Govich with Backlund and Coleman?
Yeah, you hit it out of the park.
That's kind of what I'd be thinking, too. Sharon Govich is a guy that is in the mix for that number three center spot, but I think it makes more sense. Sharon Govich got long enough of a look at center that I think you know what he is a little bit more.
And I don't want to take away from his offense. I don't want to take away what he's able to do on 100%. The wing.
I think Sharon Govich is far more effective on the wing, either side. Zeri, I think, has got the more upside down the middle, and he's got the higher potential of being a center iceman full-time in this league that I'd be leaning towards giving Zeri that shot. So Zeri, Huberdeau, Mantha is a line. Give them all kinds of offense. Give them all kinds of all offensive high ground. Absolutely. Because you're comfortable in both Kadri and Backlund taking those defensive starts and taking on tougher matchups.
And you're giving Michael Backlund 230 goal scorers to work with as your checking line.
Yeah.
I just like when I was doing it, I just like Sharon Govich, Backlund, Coleman together because you have the, again, I don't know if I'm expecting Blake Coleman to get 30 goals. It's a career year for a reason. But you have two guys that filled the net last season. And two of those three guys are your two most, I was going to say defensively responsible forwards, but at the same time, they're sort of your two best two-way forwards. Mm-hmm. And Yegor Sharangovich's two-way game is quite good as well. So I felt like those three fit together when I was doing this. Of course, you wanted to keep Pospisil, Kadri, Kuzmenko together as well.
Yeah, I feel bad doing this exercise. We're talking about Pelche specifically, but I feel bad because it does kind of leave Coronado in the American League with what they've got right now. Again, injuries happen, movement happens, all that type of stuff. That's not to say that that is what it ends up looking like, but Coronado as a fourth liner in the NHL makes no sense to me.
I mean, he did well in the role down the stretch, but that's not where I would want him to. I'd rather him play 20 to 23 minutes a night in the American Hockey League on a top line, on the top power play, give him some PK work as well.
And I know
as
opposed he'll to paying, hate that.
Oh, absolutely. But if you go down there and you take it the right way and opportunity strikes at the NHL level, you're going to jump a lot of players in the queue to play a prominent role on the NHL team by going about it that way.
The Coronado situation is interesting, too, because he's already entering the final year of his entry level.
Yeah, because he burned his first year.
Yeah, by playing the one game, right? Yep. So there's some interesting kind of side wrinkles on the Coronado situation as well because, you know, played a lot of time in the American League last year. I don't know if it's ideal to have him in the American League this year. You're never going to keep a forward, I think, in the American League too long, but his camp signed to play in the NHL, and so I think that comes into it. I'm quite interested to see how this plays itself out.
At the same time, if he comes in and blows the doors off and forces his way into a top nine role, even better.
Yep.
Even better.
Yeah, because I think you could be okay with, if it goes this way, if you had to move Pospisil to a fourth line, you could probably get your head around it. If you had to move Mantha to the fourth line, or you could probably wrap your head around it, right? Because a guy like Coronado pushed his way in. And then if that happens, as this text says, I think this text is bang on, says, when attempting to put together a starting roster, it's difficult to place both Coronado and Pelche, one or the other okay, both nope. And that is very true because as we're talking, if Coronado does what you talked about right there, bulls his way out of the roster and shows that, hey, you know, I'm better than player A or player B and pushes that player down to the fourth line, well, that pushes Pelche right out because I think Rooney, who is their number four center other than Kevin Rooney, right? Like, he's
unless Cole Schwint comes into camp and absolutely steals Rooney's job, I don't see anybody, and I'm not necessarily predicting that or forecasting that, but really, I think that's the only player that I can foresee taking Kevin Rooney's job coming out of camp.
And Lomberg is on this
and
team
Lomberg
all year.
And Lomberg is on this team all year.
You don't sign him to that deal and not play him, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah, I am fascinated to see how this plays itself out. Where does Jacob Pelche fit this year with the Calgary Flames? Of course, they got to sign him first. He's still a restricted free agent. Pelche, Schwint, and Solovyov are the three players that remain restricted free agents that need to get done. It's Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you this hour of Flames Talk coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair. And this whole conversation kind of evolved from our conversation Monday about the Flames signing Klapka and Kuznetsov, two players that made their NHL debuts last year. I think for a lot of people, Adam Klapka's turned into a real fan favorite.
Yep.
He's a gentle giant. He's a really nice guy. He's always smiling. He's been really good for the Wranglers. He took a huge step with the Wranglers this year, putting up the 21 goals and 46 points in 65 games. Played the 6 games in the NHL with the Flames as well. Scored his first NHL goal in the season finale against the San Jose Sharks. Let's check in with Adam Klapka right now. As we're talking, it's after midnight in the Czech Republic in Prague where he's at. So this was not done live, but a little earlier on this Tuesday, I had a chance to catch up with Adam Klapka. Signed his new deal with the Flames, and he's coming to training camp looking to win himself a spot. Here's our chat with Adam Klapka from a little earlier on Tuesday.
Adam, tell us about getting a new contract done, getting that out of the way. It's got to feel nice to have that done now, and now you've got the rest of the summer in front of you.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big honor for me to sign with the Calgary Flames again. I mean, you know, I'm really happy that we find the way to do the deal, and I'm really happy about it.
How do you look back on last season and some of the growth that you saw in your game?
I mean, you know, every time I go somewhere new, it's somewhere to the new team. It's took me a little bit while when I get used to it. So I knew it's gonna be the same with the Wranglers. So I just was patient and go step by step, and I believe that it's gonna come, and
top of your game.
Yeah, top of my game. So I believe I can show it the next season.
Where did you see the most growth in your game? Like, what areas do you feel you got better at this past season?
I mean, I get better in that, like, be smart with the puck and defense and like do the good decision on the blue lines and do the good decision in the important places on the ice, don't lose the pucks and don't lose the offense. So I mean, this is the part of my game that I think I got better, and I hope I'm gonna get better next season too as well.
You scored 21 in the American League, 46 points. How much more confident and comfortable are you with the offensive side of your game right now?
Yeah, I think I got confidence every time when I score the goal. You know, it showed me that I do the right things. I do the right. I'm going to the right spots on the ice. I'm going to the spots where you can score the goal. So I was really happy that I scored the goal. So that, and I mean, it's given me a lot of confidence. You know, as soon as I got the first NHL game, it gave me the push and the confidence about my game, but in the same time give me the bigger responsibility to get ready for the next season and show to the people and to management that I can compete on the NHL level.
We're talking with Adam Klapka, who signed a 1-year contract this week with the Flames. Tell us about those six NHL games, two different recalls where you got into NHL games. Adam, how do you look back at your first NHL experience last year?
Yeah, I know the first call-up when I spent there like 2 weeks over there, I was like a little bit, I couldn't believe it. I still thought I'm in the movie or something.
Yeah.
But that second call up, I was like, okay, now is the time to show that you can really compete on that level and you can be here. So I think I show it on that games. Still, I think there is so much like to things what I can be better, but I think I show enough that I learned from the mistakes what I did that four games and before the second call up, and I think I did well and I get some attention.
How do you look back on your first NHL game? Like all that went into that and you know, you mentioned kind of feeling like you were in a movie. Now that you've had a little bit of time, how do you remember your first NHL game?
Yeah, it was super special, you know, especially when you playing do your first game and then against Edmonton against McDavid, so it was really really special for me, and it was something what I never forgot, and I think I was really nervous on the start, but as soon as the game went on, I was ready to play, and I just tried to play simple game, just try to chip the pucks to the offensive zone and be simple, be physical, and I hope I did well.
Okay, now, how do you remember your first NHL goal? How special a moment was that to end the season against San Jose?
Yeah, it was amazing. You know, you still have that goal in the slow motion. As soon as I shoot the puck on the net, the puck went to going in my head to slow motion, and it's something what I'm really honored that I could score the NHL goal, and I hope I'm gonna put some more on next season.
You've gone back and you've watched it a few times, you've seen the goal on video?
Yeah, I saw it like 1,000 times. I think every time you know when you don't feel good, you don't have that confidence, it's really important to see your best plays and to get some confidence back.
That's awesome. How are you feeling about getting more NHL time this season? How confident are you that, you know, you've got another step to take this year at the NHL level?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I take it step by step. I'm coming to the camp to do my best, and everything's depends on my camp. So I want to have good camp, and what's gonna be after, it's in the sky. But I hope it's gonna be how I think it's gonna be. So we'll see.
How much do you learn from getting into those six games at the highest level? Like, how much do you learn about what it takes to be in the NHL full-time and what you'll have to do to make that happen?
Yeah, I took so much stuff from that six games. I was watching all the older guys, how they prepare for the games, what they're doing during the game, and like, I think you have to be 100% ready all the time. Like, you can get out with your minds from the ice. You have to be like ready, like all the time when you are on the ice. So I think that was the main thing what I learned from that six games with the Flames.
How has the summer been for you? What has your off-season training been like? Has it been a good summer for you?
Yeah, it was awesome. I started like my third month right now, so I'm doing my best to be ready for the camp. I have good partners for the workouts. So I'm working out with Martin Nichas and Thomas Hertl. So They're pushing me a lot during the workout, and I can't wait when the season starts.
Two pretty good guys to be training with in the summertime. Hey, that's got to be pretty helpful for you.
Yeah, it's amazing to see these guys how hard work they're putting in, and you know, they're showing me how to be pro and how to take care about your body and how to be ready to the season.
How did you get hooked up with those guys? Have you trained with them before?
No, so I find my new strength coach here in Calgary, and they working out with him like, I don't know, fifth summer. So he just put me with them to the group, and like I find out that coach through the Radim Sohorna. So he was in Calgary.
Yeah.
So he get me with him. So we work out like this, like me, Zohorna, Nichas, and Hertel, and we had fun time together. We play some games, and but of course we put some really hard work into it.
When are you planning to come back to Calgary? When do you head back over here and kind of get yourself set for the season?
So I'm coming this Friday, I think, to Canada. I'm going for 3 weeks. I'm going to Kamloops. I have friends and people who live there. So I'm going to work out there for 3 weeks, and I'm coming back like September 6th, I think, to get 1 week before the camp start.
It's pretty quickly coming, hey?
Oh yeah, I can wait. I'm really excited.
Well, I really appreciate the time today, Adam. I know that you're over in Czechia right now, so thank you so much for doing this tonight by your standards. Thanks so much, and have a great rest of your summer. I really appreciate the time.
Thank you so much. Have a good day. Thank you.
Adam Klapka, had a chance to chat with him a little earlier on this Tuesday. It's tough not to like him.
Nope.
Sitting down with him a couple of times in the hot stove. He's always such a... always shakes your hand and says thank you, and he's
big
so
smile.
Grateful, massive smile. Like he is an imposing human being, and then completely the most gentle giant ever. Big, big fan of Adam Klapka, and had a chance to chat with him a little earlier. And that I found that really interesting. Like, so for the first time ever, he's training in Prague with Tomas Hertl, Marty Natchez. So he's got some star power that he's working with this off season, and I think he understands there's an opportunity here. He understands the conversation that we just had about a guy like Jacob Pelche. Well,
yep.
You know, Lomberg is a
left shot.
Lomberg's a left shot. If all of a sudden Klapka beats out Pelche, well, that means that here's a spot for you on the right side of line number four.
Yep. Slide Lomberg to the left, Klapka on the right. And again, I don't have access to Craig Conroy's office and his depth chart that will have the magnets on the whiteboard where you're flipping around names and looking at things. But Adam Klapka does have a real legit opportunity of being 100%. A member of the Calgary Flames.
A few texts, 960-960. Guys, the conversation you've had this hour tells me that Mantha shouldn't be on this roster. I don't mind the premise, though.
No.
Of trying to sign a guy who could get you an asset at the trade deadline.
It just costs you real dollars.
Yeah.
And maybe it costs another player an opportunity at playing a top nine role, but that's something you've got to earn to start with. So if I very rarely will make a promise, right? If Matt Coronato comes into camp and runs through the exhibition schedule and absolutely dominates, the Calgary Flames will make space for him.
Yeah. I agree.
But you got to earn
it. I agree. And that's why I say I'm not prior years. You know, if this was 2 or 3 years ago, I would be concerned that a signing like Mantha might block the door for somebody. But yeah,
Calgary Flames, I promise you, the Calgary Flames are more invested in Matt Coronato than they are Anthony Mantha,
yeah,
based on age,
long-term
contract
sure.
situation, 100%.
And if Coronato finds a way on, he'll find a way on. Like if he plays well enough, he'll be there. And I think the same is true with Pelche.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all.
Mick writes, Kadri 1C, Zeri 2C, Backlund 3C, Pospisil 4C, Rooney's the 13th forward. I don't mind that, honestly. I wonder if Pospisil's better used as a top nine winger as opposed to a number four C. That's all.
I think he is, but listening to that text come through, you reading it, how much fun would a Pelche, Pospisil, Lomberg line be?
Yeah,
oh my goodness.
Yeah, that'd be,
that would be
some tenacity.
That would probably be one of the words you can say on air.
Yeah.
And there are several other off air.
Yeah. Thanks to Adam Klopka, by the way, joining us here this hour on Flames Talk. He joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs since 1975. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call them at 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Rolling along this Tuesday, Steinberg Vickers. How about the St. Louis Blues?
Off the top rope.
Not one, but two offer sheets in the same day. Now that is an NHL first. I don't believe we've ever seen two offer sheets simultaneously at the same time.
From the same organization.
From the same organization to the same organization. Just an absolute punch to the gut. St. Louis has delivered to the Edmonton Oilers and puts them in a really tough spot. If you are just catching up or you are not aware fully of the particulars, here's the deal. The Blues roll out two offer sheets to members of the Edmonton Oilers. They signed Philip Broberg to a two-year offer sheet with an AAV of $4,580,917.
Very specific.
And they sign forward Dylan Holloway to a two-year offer sheet at $2,290,457. Now, you wonder...
Oddly specific.
Why are these such oddly specific numbers? As Frank Saravalli pointed out on Twitter a little earlier on Tuesday, so here's how offer sheets work. There are... And they step up every year. Like, they progress every year. The numbers change every year. But every season, there are tiers of compensation based on the AAV that is offered to said player on an offer sheet. And they go from this draft pick to you go into the next tier. It's a higher draft pick. Into the next tier, it's multiple draft picks. Then even more draft picks. And they just keep on taking steps in terms of what the compensation owed to the team losing the player would be if they don't match. So in this case, for both Broberg and Holloway, they were the highest possible total before going into the next tier. Down to the dollar, $1 more would have put them into the next tier for compensation. As it stands right now, second round pick would be the compensation for Broberg. Third round pick would be the compensation for Holloway.
One more dollar and Broberg would have fetched a first and a third in compensation, and one more dollar for Holloway would have upgraded from a third to
a second. Yeah.
Tidy bit of work by Armstrong and the Blues.
And I absolutely love this. And this has nothing to do, so 780 area code, settle down. This has nothing to do with a team putting Calgary's arch rival in a tough spot. That is a fun side benefit, I will not lie, but that is not the reason why I love this as much as I do. I just love this because it's different. We don't see general managers be this aggressive ever. We've never seen two offer sheets hit the same team at the same time. We never see offer sheets, period. The last one was more than 3 years ago when Jesperi Kotkaniemi was offer sheeted by, or actually a little bit less than 3 years ago, August of 2021, when Kotkaniemi signed his offer sheet with Carolina and Montreal opted not to match. Prior to that, it was summer of 2019 before we even knew what COVID-19 was, and Sebastian Aho got matched by Carolina when Montreal signed him to an offer sheet. There have been... Prior to today, there have been two offer sheets in the last decade that was doubled in one day by Doug Armstrong and the St. Louis Blues. Give me aggressive general managers trying to better their team in any way possible all day. I don't understand why we don't see more offer sheets in this league. I mean, I do, because you're trying to avoid other GMs being grumpy. I get that grumpiness is the main reason why these things don't happen all the time. But from a strict making your team better standpoint, I think St. Louis has done a really nice job in not giving up a whole lot, using cap space they have, and trying to bring in a couple of promising young hockey players.
This is one of the ways you can, in my opinion, best weaponize your cap space, because the St. Louis Blues are taking an advantage of an Edmonton Oilers team that, prior to whether or not they do or don't match these deals, are over the cap. They're about 400K ballpark over the cap. St. Louis comes in, signs these simultaneous offer sheets with these players. And keep in mind, these players signed offer sheets with the St. Louis Blues as well. It's not like any random team can go, oh, we've signed you to an offer sheet.
Agent and player have to agree.
Agent and player agree. And
remember, Joe Sakic signed, like, agreed to sign an offer sheet with the New York Rangers. He was willing to leave Colorado 20 years ago or 25 years ago, whenever that was.
So this, to me, is equal parts ruthless, and I'm okay with that, and shrewd. And I'm definitely okay with that, because I cannot logically come up with a scenario where the St. Louis Blues don't end up with at least one of them. Mm-hmm. And the Oilers have to do something tricky to make sure that they don't lose both.
They have got to do whatever they can to keep Broberg.
And that's the one I don't think that they can make the room for. I agree with you. My priority, if I'm the Edmonton Oilers, is Broberg. But can they clear that much space to make it happen? Yes, you get the bump in the offseason. You can go 10% up.
Which they do have. Like, they could match both and be under that threshold.
But you have to be compliant.
You have to be compliant to start the year.
Now,
they will get, it sounds like, they will get LTIR relief, LTIR credit with Evander Kane to start the year. So they'll be able to kick the can down the road a little bit, which makes it a little more likely that they'll be able to match a guy like Broberg. Because if they were to let Holloway walk, for instance, and match Broberg, get the third round pick, keep Broberg, yeah, maybe a little bit higher than they would have liked to go, but at the very least, they're keeping a huge part of their future and not losing a player from their weakest area. And then you LTIR Kane and do something else. Maybe you can make that work.
There's not going to be a GM in the league throwing the Edmonton Oilers a lifeline. They will be very much taken advantage of on the back end of this, if that's the route that they choose to go.
2,000%.
This is why this is so cold-blooded by the St. Louis Blues. In my mind, they've guaranteed themselves at least one.
So I'm just thinking right now. So if you match Broberg, so that's $4.5 million. So that puts you like roughly 5.2. So say you're 5.2 over the cap.
Kane is 5.125.
That's pretty much that. And then do you send a Connor Brown to the American League? Do you send a Derek Ryan to the American League? If you're going to do this, you have to be okay making sacrifices elsewhere. You have to be okay with eating bad money in the American League if you want to keep it. Like, I think that you almost, can they trade one of those guys? Can they move a Janmark? Can they move a Henrique all of a sudden? I mean, I know they sign these guys to take another run at the Stanley Cup. I fully understand what the Oilers are trying to do, but they did not anticipate two offer sheets hitting them on the same day. You got to go into scramble mode a little bit.
Welcome to the job, Stan Bowman.
Yeah.
And I understand the sentiment that's out there. Why wouldn't the Oilers take care of this on July 1? Well, you didn't have the option if you're the Edmonton Oilers. I'm just going to explain a little bit. You're allowed to talk to restricted free agents, I believe it's the evening of June 30th. So Broberg's agents, Holloway's agents, I'm not sure if they're rep by the same individual or if it's two separate individuals, but they know at that point, I have to imagine the St. Louis Blues went to him, we're interested and this is the range that we might be looking at. We're not able to do it immediately, but keep this in your back pocket if and when you decide you want to negotiate with the Edmonton Oilers. They know that those players, and again, you don't know until you have the contract right in front of you. But the St. Louis Blues are in your agents here going, yeah, we're going to probably offer sheet you at 4 point whatever. And we're going to offer sheet you at 2.2. If you want a basis or a starting ground to negotiate with the Edmonton Oilers,
yeah,
here's your leverage. And so tip of the cap to the St. Louis Blues for being able to orchestrate this.
Yeah.
It's a phenomenal bit of work from their part. And again, one of the ways you can weaponize cap space.
Well, and what I like a lot about the deals here is that St. Louis has made it so that they found themselves a really nice middle ground. Because if you were to ask me, if any team, St. Louis or otherwise, if you've got the cap space, Would you trade a second round pick for Broberg in that contract?
100%.
1,000% all day. Same with Holloway. Would you trade a third round pick for a 22-year-old first round pick at that contract? All day I would. So if St. Louis ends up getting both guys, they have made masterstrokes. And what's the, so you get Stan Bowman angry at you and maybe he comes back at you 2 years down the road and offer sheets you. Who knows? Doug Armstrong might not even be the GM. He's been the GM of that team for 14 years. He might not be there in 2 years. I don't think that there is anything wrong with this. And the nice little threshold that Armstrong has found is that the compensation isn't crazy for his team, but the dollar figures are crippling enough for Edmonton that he might be able to get one or both of them here.
And in 2 years' time, if Dylan Holloway isn't worth $2.29 million and the experiment failed, you're out of third-round pick. You're out of 21% chance of landing an NHLer in the draft. And same for Broberg, who comes in as a former eighth overall pick who looked really good in the playoffs.
Broberg can play, man. I like, that is the guy they cannot lose.
If he is not a $4.5 million defenseman in 2 years when he's a restricted free agent for the St. Louis Blues, you're out of second. But all indications point to him hitting his stride, and now you've got him for, if he turns out to be a top four or a top three defenseman and all it cost you was a second round to acquire him at age 23, you're giggling. You're giggling.
And I don't know, but Doug Armstrong and Stan Bowman were in that Central Division.
Oh, don't discount
Central
that.
Division foes for a long time. So this from Sam in Calgary, who says, can you please explain this? Who initiates the offer sheet? Would the player be approaching the team telling them he'd like to sign for a specific dollar figure? Or does the team make the first move and they get to negotiate with the player without being accused of tampering? So the way that I understand it on this one, at least on the Broberg case, and I would imagine the same is true with Holloway, is that the agents were looking around saying, hey, do you want to offer sheet our guy? Is this something you'd be interested in? Because they were kind of stagnated with the Oilers cap situation. So you're trying to force a contract. You're trying to get your guy the best dollar figure he can.
That's what you get paid to do, is get him the money.
So I think that that would be my guess, is that the agents initiated this and they found a taker in St. Louis. This says, Broberg doesn't even want to be there. He asked out last year. Why keep him for way, way too much? The reason why you keep him is, in my eyes, he's shown he can be a really important piece for you. They're thin on the blue line. I'm sorry. That is the one thing that holds them back from me saying, oh, yeah, these guys are shoe-ins to be back in the Cup final. I still hate their blue line for a championship-caliber blue line. Broberg, with what he did in the playoffs, took that blue line to a different level, made them far more competent, not just because of him, but because of the way, as Lou always said, slotting, right? It just made them slot better because Broberg helped so much.
Well, looking at what they have now, based on recent sample size being the playoffs, there's probably an argument to be made that Broberg is at worst the number four as it stands today on the blue line. Maybe three, depending on how you're feeling about Darnell Nurse. He's not ahead of Evan Bouchard, not ahead of Matthias Ekholm, but then you have Nurse, CC Kulak. And if we're choosing between those individuals, I want the 23-year-old former eighth overall pick that looks like he's starting to come into his own a little bit.
Yep. I love offer sheets. They don't happen enough. I was all for, minus the waiver thing, but I was all for the Flames offer sheeting Ryan O'Reilly. I was all for Montreal going after Aho if Marc Bergevin just would have made it difficult.
Yeah.
He just,
well, they were trying to capitalize on thin pockets from the offer. The AAV wasn't out to run. It was the amount of guaranteed upfront money. They tried to cripple the Carolina Hurricanes by making them dump a whole bunch of money out of their bank account into Sebastian Aho's, but it didn't work.
And Don Woodall just lolled at that one and said, okay, thanks for helping us out.
We'll get you back.
And then they did.
Yep.
That'll wrap us up this hour. Thanks to Adam Klapka for stopping by. Thanks to Doug Armstrong for giving us something juicy to talk about today. Thanks to Camp. Thanks to Shan. As always, Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. And this hour of Flames Talk has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Save 40% on a Halo Smart Lock and start unlocking your house right from your phone. Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com.